Our Australia correspondent is Chris Nishi, and a belated Happy Australia Day for yesterday, Chris.
Well, yes, thanks, Catherine. I saying Happy Australia Day to people in Australia these days is a little bit fraught, actually. It's not a day everyone celebrates anymore.
Of course, it's a very very fair point. Just have a happy day then. We need
you,
a few
did,
more
I
of
did.
Them this year.
Yes.
And I'm curious also as to what's happening to your temperatures. You seem to be sending some fairly hot stuff to us at the moment.
Oh yeah, it's been really very hot. We're in the middle of a heat wave at the moment on the east coast. The part of Sydney I'm in, which is by the coast, is hitting temperatures of about 35 degrees. People living further west in Sydney are having temperatures in the low 40s, and it's just one of those. They're just temperatures that really don't make you want to do anything. You just want to sit around and you just feel listless, and they just really saps your energy, and you don't really get much done or want to do much.
Well, I'm sorry, for the next 10 minutes, we're putting the nose to the grindstone. Right, this travel bubble, what are the implications of Scott? Well, what was Scott Morrison's logic first in a very rapid response? We're still waiting. At the moment, we only have the one case, and all the other close contacts are coming back negative. So far, so good without getting overconfident about it. But what prompted such a quick reaction?
I think there were concerns that this woman had travelled around New Zealand or the north of New Zealand and visited, as I understand it, 30 different locations before she was diagnosed. So there were concerns that it could have spread further into the New Zealand community, and that people could be unknowingly jumping on planes, flying to Australia, walking straight out of the airport and into our community, and potentially spreading the virus here unwittingly. I would say, though, we've seen this sort of thing a lot between the states, where we saw it before Christmas, there was an outbreak in Sydney, which I'm sure you covered, and very quickly the Victorian government and other governments around the country slapped the travel ban on Sydney. And this is just what governments are doing. When there's an outbreak, they just slap a travel ban on people from that area without negotiation, without discussion, without warning. It just happens until they're satisfied it's completely safe.
What we did see on this side, of course, was people, including people who looked like they were migrating semi-permanently, having their plans thrown up in the air. And one woman I know was supposed to be starting a new job and had left her accommodation. So there was an inconvenience factor. And I guess the bigger question is, what does this indicate for how any travel bubble, whenever it's able to start, might operate? Is this what we can expect?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be as seamless as we might have hoped, that we'd be jumping on planes and popping to and from New Zealand or the other way around. I suspect, and I think there's a feeling that it will be problematic, that we might have the travel bubble, but an outbreak in either country could see it shut down, could see it halted. And as you say, people's plans are just thrown into disarray. But we've seen this throughout COVID. I know New Zealand was, if you recall, I think about the first country to slap a travel ban on. And I've got friends in Australia who were due to fly to New Zealand, I think one afternoon to get married, and learned of the travel bubble the day before. And that was it for their wedding. The travel ban, rather, that was it for their wedding. And I think we're just going to see a lot more sort of things like that.
And that's if the damn thing gets started anyway, the way things are heading. Can I ask you quickly, I don't know if there's any more information on where Australia's at with securing its vaccines, because what's becoming really clear is that, as predicted, there's going to be a proverbial over supply. Now, I know there'd been some talk about trying to bring the vaccinating of your border workers forward to February, but is there a question marks now over when you're going to get your vaccines delivered?
Small question marks. The government is still confident. We've got 10 million Pfizer vaccines on order, and I know there have been some supply issues in Europe, but the Health Minister, Greg Hunt, said a day or two ago that he was confident we would still get our vaccines by mid or late February. But more significantly is the fact that we have a licensing agreement with AstraZeneca to manufacture 50 million doses of the vaccine in this country. So we're not so reliant on Pfizer and what happens to them.
So how many doses, sorry, Chris, how many doses arrive by end of February? Did you say 10,000?
No, 10 million.
10 million. So my next...
I'm not sure if all 10 million are to come in February, but when the government is expecting the first doses to arrive, and they will go out to frontline quarantine workers, frontline health workers, and people aged over 75.
The question that arises is what, if any, cooperation there might be between the two countries. And I know there was some kind of an agreement in principle reached last year before New Zealand signed some of its own bilaterals. But if we're trying to open a travel bubble, would it not make sense for New Zealand and Australia to cooperate on getting both sets of border staff vaccinated? Or is that just not going to fly?
I would have thought, to me, it makes sense. I haven't seen any commentary on that. And I think there's a general expectation in Australia that there just won't be much travel in 2021. And I don't think, from what I understand, I don't think many people are sort of making plans to go to New Zealand. We've got friends going back to New Zealand in a couple of weeks, but they're resigned to doing the 2 weeks quarantine and so on.
So the bubble is deflating.
Yes.
The vaccine issue, it depends how bad this gets, to be blunt, and whether we're looking at, okay, we might get our delivery end of March, I think, is our first forward order for border staff, and then second half of the year for everyone else. But if we start to see significant slippage, one wonders whether the governments might not be talking about localised production, but we might be just a little bit ahead of ourselves. Let's talk about your other big story here. What is this long-running extradition battle with Israel?
Yeah, it concerns a woman called Malka Lefa, who was the headmistress at an ultra-Orthodox Jewish girls' school called Adas Israel Girls' School in Melbourne. And she is facing 74 charges of sexual abuse relating to her position. And it's been a long-running extradition battle with Israel that has sort of led to some tensions between the two countries. It started in 2008 when Lefa jumped on a plane and flew to Israel when allegations about her behaviour started circulating. She was subsequently charged and then faced 70 different court hearings over her extradition where she argued she was mentally unfit to stand trial. And I think there's a perception here that the Israeli government didn't really help very much, wasn't really very sympathetic to the desires, to the Australian government and Australian prosecutors' desires to get her back here. And in fact, the Deputy Health Minister was found to have been pressuring psychiatrists to produce favourable reports for her.
She's now coming back, though?
She's due to land in Melbourne today. She was rushed out of Israel 2 or 3 days ago because they are also about to slap a travel ban on the country because of COVID, another COVID outbreak.
Extraordinary story. Just to finish, we've talked a lot about the with our media commentator yesterday, the latest over the Google threat to ban search in Australia as this tussle with the government goes on. What do you see happening? That feels like the end of the world in some ways for some people. Is the government going to hold firm?
The government is certainly talking as if they are, and I suspect that they will. I think it would be tough for them to back down. I suspect Google might back down. Google earns $4.8 billion of revenue in Australia, and $4.3 billion of that comes from search advertising. So to shut down search would be hugely expensive for them. And for the rest of us, we don't have to use Google. It's convenient, and we're all used to it, but we could quite easily use something like Microsoft's Bing or there's a search engine called DuckDuckGo, I believe. I haven't used it, but I believe that's quite good as well. So there are a lot of alternatives for us.
Yeah, they ain't quite the same. The question is whether they would exponentially improve with use and increased demand, and whether we start to see some genuine competition. But at the moment, it is a gigantic behemoth up against some very small ducks.
Well, yes, there is a view that if these search engines were used more, they would improve a lot, and their results improve a lot. Yeah. I guess what Google's doing is they're really holding out, because Australia's the first country to really do this. A couple of, I think France has had a go, but not very successfully. So Australia's really the first country to do this. And I think Google's, and that is to charge, to try and force Google to pay for news, pay publishers for news. And I think Google worries that if Australia succeeds, other jurisdictions will follow.
This is why I don't understand. There is not a combined effort between the likes of the EU and maybe New Zealand and Australia and Canada, and the US is its own ship, to do it together so that these sorts of threats can't be held.
It would make sense. It'd make a lot of sense.
They've got a few other things on their mind right now, Chris.
Yeah.
Hey, thank you. Yeah, thanks very, very much. Right. Chris Nishi is our Australia correspondent. I'll let him get back in the swimming pool.